good morning everybody. Everybody still good? Some people won some money yesterday. Not a lot of people apparently.
More losers than winners. Yeah.
Welcome to the second and last day of Beam Summit. You're in Reno 2 right now, if you were not aware yet. And we'll be listening to Brian talking about Arrow and Beam and how they can work together. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. So like you said, I'm going to be talking about how we can potentially use Arrow and Beam together to do some columnar data processing at scale. First introduce myself. I'm Brian Hewlett. I work at Google. I'm a committer on the Arrow project, and I am a lowly contributor to the Beam project. I've been working with Beam since, I think, February, since I joined the current team I'm on at Google. That's me. What I wanted to know is, so my contribution to the Arrow project was I actually mostly worked on the JavaScript implementation, so, you know, I wasn't too down in the weeds. It's kind of a weird way to get into the project, but it let me make some pretty pictures, so that was cool. So my agenda for today is, first I want to, you know, I'm going to kind of, we're at the Beam Summit, so I'm going to assume that most people have some kind of working knowledge of Beam, so I'm sorry if that's not you, but I'm going to jump into first the introduction to what is Arrow, since most people might not really know a whole lot about it, or might just understand it at a high level. And then I'm going to get into why we as the Beam community should care about using Arrow in our pipelines. And then I also have some benchmarks that I want to show you about how performance improvements that we might be able to get from that. And then also talk a little bit about how we might start to use Arrow in Beam in the future. All right, yeah, so first, what is Apache Arrow? So I sort of think of the project as three distinct things. Distinct-ish things. So the first thing is that it's a specification at its core. It's really just a specification for an in-memory format for data. So in that way, it's a lot like a project like Parquet or Orc, where it's just built around like some file format. But the key difference with Arrow is that it's an in-memory format. So like the format is not intended for long-term storage. It's for data that you have in memory or maybe are transferring between processes. So like maybe as a wire format or primarily as actually like an in-memory format. And it's a specification for a columnar format, so that's important because it, you know, gives you potential performance improvements. I'll get into that in a little bit more detail. So the second thing that Arrow is, you know, specification by itself isn't particularly useful. So in Arrow, you have reference implementations for in a variety of different languages for this format. I'm not sure that I actually even have the entire list there. Like, it seemed to grow super fast. The most mature one is C++, and Java is also very old. Those are both native implementations. A lot of the other ones are actually just like bindings into the C++ one. But then there's more native ones. The JavaScript one is a native implementation. Rust is a native implementation. But so all these are implementations to read and write the same in-memory format. And then finally, the last thing it is, you know, once you have this core foundation of an in-memory format for your columnar data and ways to produce and consume it in different languages, people want to, you know, do cool computation things on top of it and do interesting things with it. So people have started to add interesting computation libraries and various other sub-projects to Arrow to do things with the Arrow data. So I'll go into each of these things in a little bit more detail. So I mentioned that Arrow is a specification for columnar in-memory data. So if you don't really know what that means, basically the high-level view is if you have tabular data, so data with like rows that all have some attributes, if you want to lay that data out in memory, there's kind of two different ways you can do it. You could kind of take the traditional approach where you first put all the values for each row together in memory. So you first put all the values for one row and then the next row and then the next row. It's also called like a row major approach. And that's nice because it's, you know, it's easy to reason about. It's easy to find a particular row that you might care about. You know, everything that's related to each other is all together. But with a columnar format like Arrow or also some of these file formats like Parquet and Orc, they say like, no, that's too simple. We want to make things confusing, so we're going to transpose it all. So when instead in an arrow buffer or any columnar format, you would put everything for a given attribute in a single array in memory. So first you would have all the values for, in this case, section ID in an array, and then timestamp, and then source IP. And then what that gets you is that in your sort of common data access patterns where you're actually just like scanning over a couple of columns, maybe not accessing all of the columns at once, you're not polluting your cache with data that you're not actually using like you would be if you were scanning over your traditional buffer. And then also because all of your data that's like of the same type is together in memory, you can start to do vectorization and use like SIMD instructions. So that's like single instruction, multiple data. Like, so you can do things like multiply four numbers together in a single processor instruction. So you know you can just get big performance wins that way, like just for free, like four times performance improvement, which is great. But yeah, so like I said, the problem with columnar is that it's a little harder to reason about. So you know, if you have your traditional memory buffer, it's really easy to just add more data on the end, just add more rows at the end. But in arrow or any columnar format, where do you put another record? Like, do you want to copy your buffers and move them a little bit and insert some things in there? Like, that would be pretty inefficient. So the most common approach is in any kind of columnar system is you do batching. So in arrow, this is like what the streaming format looks like. You would first send a schema, so they have like a portable binary representation for your schema that defines like what all the fields are and what their types are. And then you would start to send just batches of records. And each one of these batches would just look like that arrow buffer there, where you just have an array for all of your attributes. And so as to say, basically the fundamental unit of data in arrow is a record batch, right? So you just have record batches of n records together. And so that's an important thing to realize when you're trying to do columnar processing. All right. Yeah, so coming back to the first slide, so the other thing that arrow is, it's implementations for this columnar format, in-memory format, in a bunch of different languages. And what that gets you is it starts to make it so that arrow is a common data layer. So, you know, this is a picture I took from the arrow website back in the olden days, in the olden times before arrow. What you had to do is you had all these different projects that all had their own different ways of representing data. And if you wanted to move things between them, you had to like convert it and copy it to some serialization format, move it over, copy it again, and deserialize it over at on the receiving end. But with arrow, the idea is that all these systems will operate on the same in-memory format. And so if these systems are operating on the same machine, even, they could read from the same like shared memory. Or even if they're not on the same machine, you can use like the arrow wire formats to actually transfer data between them. And then on the receiving end, you just read the data directly rather than having to deserialize it. So you can get, so instead of wasting cycles doing like serialization and deserialization, you just move the data around. Yeah, and you'll notice there's a lot of Apache projects on this graphic that just happened to be on the Arrow website. The only one that's not is Pandas, but also Beam is missing from there. So I think we should get that on the chart. Yeah, so the last thing that Arrow is you know, computation library sort of built on top of this format. So there's a few different things within the Arrow project right now that are all sort of in progress. Gandiva and Data Fusion are maybe the most complete ones. So there's C++. It has a compute library within their library. So it can do, has some basic computation kernels, so it can do some aggregations and sorting and filtering. That's still sort of in progress. They're still adding a lot more capabilities there. There are also plans to add like some data frame functionality to C++. You know, you can start to do things like, if you're familiar with the Python Pandas library, you can do things like that from C++, and they'll have bindings in Python, I'm sure. Gandiva is a really cool project, sub-project contributed by a company called Dremio. So what that actually does is it does, you give it an expression tree. So something like, you know, if you have an arrow record batch with like three columns, A, B, C, you give an expression tree that's like, I want you to compute A times B, and C minus A, and B divided by A times 3, or something like that. You would give it these expressions that you want it to evaluate, and then it uses LLVM to generate optimized code to perform those, to compute those expressions on arrow record batches, and then you can churn through some data with it. So there are bindings for Gandiva even now in C++, Python, and Java. So you can actually use those use Gandiva right now to do those sorts of things. There's also an interesting project called Data Fusion that's in the part of the Rust library. So that adds an in-memory query engine that's based on Arrow. The way it works is basically you just give it a SQL string, and then it can execute that SQL string on Arrow data. But it's intended just to operate on a single node. It's not any kind of like distributed thing. There are also some interesting external projects based on Arrow. So NVIDIA has this like RAPIDS CUDA data frame, GPU data frame spec, and their spec is actually just Arrow. So if you have the system where you have Arrow data all over the place, you could actually potentially accelerate certain steps by using GPUs, by using some of this CUDA code that NVIDIA has already provided for you. All right, so enough about Arrow. Why should we, as the Beam community, care about using it in our project? So the first thing is, you know, I just told you about all these cool computation things. Like, I want to use them. So if we use Arrow and Beam, we can start to actually use all of these things. And there's also already been some, people have shown some big wins by using Arrow in their projects. So like PySpark had, I guess, made news, I think it was like late 2017, where they actually added the ability to write vectorized UDFs using Arrow. And so they actually, in that case, they used Arrow as an intermediate format between their internal columnar format and like the pandas columnar format. But still, since it's like columnar all the way through, it was just still pretty fast. And so they were able to, you know, bring this data into the Python context and let people execute Python vectorized functions, like do things with pandas and that sort of thing. And they reported a variety of different performance improvements depending on the operation, anywhere from like 3 times up to like 240 times. It's kind of crazy. The other reason that Beam should care is like I feel like these two projects have very similar goals. Like we're trying to break down barriers between different languages. Like, you know, Beam, we want you to be able to use whatever SDK you want to use, whatever your language of choice, and run it on any runner that might be implemented in any runner. And Arrow has a similar goal, right? We have implementations for the same in-memory format in a bunch of different languages. They're natural things to use together because we can actually start to do cross-language things with columnar data. Another reason is we're starting to add this concept of structured data to Beam. So, you know, historically we didn't care too much about like what your actual data looked like, but we're starting to add schemas and SQL and schema aware transforms to Beam. This is primarily in the Java SDK right now, but you know, there's interest in making it portable and extending it to the other SDKs. And I think that's a very natural place for Arrow to fit in, since it's a representation for your structured data. Finally, another thing is there are actually many sources that we have in Beam today that could be read in as Arrow record batches instead. And so that's something that people could actually start to do now. So Arrow has readers for these common data formats like Parquet, CSV, and ORC, where you actually, you know, you read in a data file and you get out an Arrow record batch, and then you can do some computation on that. And there are similar things. So in the BigQuery storage API, they actually recently added the capability to get your data out of BigQuery as in the Arrow format. Previously, you had to use the row-oriented Avro format. I also, this week, learned that Apache Iceberg, I guess, is a project to add tables that are backed by blob stores. They actually produce Arrow record batches as well. So that's something that we could actually start to use today. And that's one thing I wanted to dig into a little bit more. It's like if people started to do that, what sort of performance improvements could they get? So that's what I started to benchmark. So I wanted to kind of benchmark sort of a typical use case, and I talked to my boss Ken about it, and he suggested I use the TPCH queries, which is TPCH is this common benchmark for database systems. Where they have ways to generate a bunch of random data and then say, like, run this SQL query on it and tell me how long it took. I wanted to build a pipeline to execute basically the first SQL query that is part of the TPCH standard. So this is what the first one looks like. Basically, you know, it kind of has like all the classic bits of a SQL query. It's just like doing a group by on these certain fields. And then it does a variety of aggregations. So aggregations on some fields, aggregations on some computed columns, does a filter on the date. And so, you know, it sort of has all the various bits. So it's a relatively interesting use case. So what I did for my benchmark is I generated a bunch of data with the TPCH DBGen tool, converted to Parquet, and wrote it out to Google's GCS. And then I wrote two different Python pipelines. So using it was just easiest to prototype with the Python SDK. So I used one of them. I used the read from Parquet transform, which exists now in Beam. And that is a transform that reads from Arrow and produces like Python dictionaries. And then I wrote another one that uses read from Parquet batched, which is something that I have a PR up to add to Beam now. And that basically just produces an Arrow record batch per Parquet file. So instead of like actually splitting it out into Python dictionaries, it just gives you an entire batch for the Parquet file. And then I compared the performance for these two runners running on Dataflow, and then also compared the performance for these two pipelines on two different runners, on Dataflow and on the Flink runner running on Dataproc. So this is what the two pipelines look like. This, you know, the element-wise one is pretty simple. You know, you just do the read and then does the filter by the ship date, adds a key, then does all of the combines and aggregations. So all of the like computed columns and combines and stuff are all combined in that combined fun. So in the batch pipeline is a little bit more complicated. So now you'll see you do this read from Parquet batched, and that produces a peak collection of Arrow record batches. So that's important. Like now these are actual batches of multiple records together. And then another thing is the very first thing I do is actually convert this record batch to pandas. Ideally I would actually be doing some like Arrow native computation rather than converting it to the pandas format, but this was just, you know, for prototyping, this was the easiest thing to do, and it's a relatively inexpensive operation. So yeah, convert it to pandas, compute the computed columns, do a filter, and then this does all of the aggregations and combining here. And so you'll notice I actually have to do this. It takes two steps because I first have to aggregate the individual record batches, so that's doing this pandas group by, and then doing the actual Beam aggregation. So yeah, so what kind of performance improvement do you get here? So it depended a little bit on the runner. So first, running on Dataflow, I just fixed it at two workers, so the auto-scaling didn't cause any variations. And then in that case, you've got a 4x improvement from the batch pipeline over the element-wise pipeline. So, you know, a far cry from 240 times, but it's still pretty, you know, if you can make your pipeline 4x cheaper, that's pretty great. Then I ran the same thing on the Flink cluster, and in that case, it got a 3x performance improvement, so same order of magnitude. I also, this week, I was like, man, people are going to laugh at me if I start talking about, like, two-worker clusters, so I figured I should scale it up, so I just decided to just do everything 100 times. So I did 100 times as much data, ran it with fixed at 200 workers on Dataflow, and in that case, it actually was a little bit better, 6x performance improvement. So this is great. Mission accomplished. We have Arrow and Beam now. Talk over. no, not really. So there are a lot of problems with this approach. So basically what I've done here is I've said every element is now actually lots of elements. You know, I have every element is a batch of records. I jumped forward. Hang on one second. So there's the first problem with this is that it's ugly. The biggest problem is that we have these two different steps to do the aggregation, right? So that, you know, that's not great. We first have to do the pandas aggregation and then do the Beam aggregation. But we could actually, you know, we could make that simpler. We could provide tools to, like, do all of this in one and, like, just make it a nicer way to write a pipeline. But the bigger problem that I started to jump forward to is that this breaks the Beam model, right? Now I have multiple records in an individual element going through my pipeline. And so I can't have a single event timestamp to represent like what that record is. So if I wanted to do windowing or anything like that to actually have a streaming pipeline or even do windowing in a batch pipeline, I couldn't do that. And that's the only reason I'm able to do this. And so that being said, like if you are, if this is a use case that you're doing, like if you have a bunch of data and you want to use Beam on it to process it in a batched way, like this is something that you could maybe do and get some performance improvements. And it, yeah, you know, it could be a win for you. But I don't think it's the right thing for us to sort of encourage people to do in Beam in the long term. So, yeah. So then the question is, what is the right thing for us to do in Beam? So I think really the right way for us to integrate Aero into Beam in the future is that it should be a coder or something like a coder that basically encodes rows. So rows are the concept of like something that has a schema in the schema API in Java. And so if you were able to encode those rows in the Aero format, then you would actually be able to process that data. And then the way that would work is that you would actually, if you were processing a P collection of rows, you could have this row instance that was really just a view into your Aero buffer. So you could have a bunch of row instances that actually just are references into the various places in Aero memory. So if you wanted to write like sort of a row-oriented do fun, you would be able to do that just by processing that row. But then if you wanted to be able to write a batch do fun, we could add an interface like a batch process element or process element batched or something that would actually give you the entire Aero record batch. And then you could write some vectorized do fun that operates on all of that. So I wanted to think about, so if we did sort of go this route, like what would the future look like? So this is my vision of the glorious future where we have schemas and doing things with Aero. This is an entirely made up API, I will say. So this is the kind of a inglorious combination of like the Python SDK and what exists now in the Beam schema API in Java. So the idea is, you know, you would read from Parquet and this would actually produce a P collection of rows, and those rows would actually just be like views into your Aero buffer. And then you would pipe that into all these schema aware transforms. So like compute column adds the extra computing columns. Filter by does the filtering, group by for the aggregations. And all of these transforms would be aware of rows and then also of Aero. So you'd be able to actually do optimized computation on the actual Aero buffers. And or, actually the way you could do this is you could just use SQL, right? So at the beginning I showed you a SQL string. We have a SQL transform in Beam. We could just use that maybe. So you could read from Parquet in the same way, produce rows that are actually backed by Aero, and then pipe that into a SQL transform with the argument of just the SQL string that I showed you before. This is a mostly fictional API. It's more like science fiction, I guess, because you know we have a SQL transform in Java. We're starting to work on cross-language transforms. So this is something that is conceivable to have in the near future, to have this SQL transform in Python. The key takeaways, I guess, from my talk are if you don't care about event times and you just want to run some batch pipeline, you're not doing windowing or anything, you could actually, you know, we could start to add more IOs that produce Aero data like that, and you could do things with Aero in Beam today. So that's pretty exciting. But really, in the long term, to integrate Aero effectively, I think we need a better concept of schemas and schema-aware transforms. So, like, we need to do some of the things, like Etienne was talking about, like, figure out how we can have a schema for like windowed values, make schemas portable, have them in the Python SDK. So all these things need to get fleshed out before we can really use Aero effectively in Beam, I think. All right, that's all I have. So any questions? I guess we have some flashlights, so if you ask a question, you get a flashlight. Yeah. Did I compare the memory consumption? Yeah, it's an interesting question. I could look at, there may be some metrics actually that are saved that I could pull up to answer that for you. But yeah, I didn't actually compare that, so I don't know.
Okay. The second question. Just an idea, right? To align row batches with Beam bundles.
So that's another question. Is like in a streaming pipeline, where would you actually do the batching of your data in order to have an Aero batch? You know, in this case, I'm reading from like Columnar sources, so it's natural, like we already have batches there. So yeah, I think that could make sense to align, you know, when we're bundling data to go across like the Fun API or something like that, that would be a natural place to like then just turn that into an Aero buffer. So, yeah. Jim?
For the query you were working with, were you actually calculating additional columns that were also like done up in the Aero file format?
I'm not sure. You mean like the way I implemented it?
Yeah.
So it actually, it wasn't this sort of like computation graph where you say like, I'm going to do these things and then aggregate them or something like that. It was, I actually produced like new pandas data frames that had those computed columns in them. Mm-hmm. So, so you could potentially get an improvement there by instead like saying, I'm just going to compute this and aggregate it as I go.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone about this yesterday, and like they had a good point. They were like, "Well, does this just come from the fact that you're processing batch data, or is it something actually about like the columnar processing?" I don't have a good picture of like in those particular benchmarks where the performance improvement is really coming from, since it's just sort of this end-to-end, like, how long did it take? I don't have great metrics into it. I just know from other micro benchmarks where you're doing similar things, like, you can get big performance improvements from columnar layouts, but, yeah, just kind of going on faith, I guess. Ishmael?
I saw this project that you mentioned
So I initially mentioned that here, but then when I had all the various sub projects and things, but I figured I should just focus on the computation ones. There's some other interesting things, like Aero Flight is it's like an extension of gRPC basically for transmitting Aero data, and I think they've kind of like made some tweaks to it to where everything can be sort of zero copy, so that do a lot less copying of data. Potentially we could use it because, you know, we use gRPC for our Fun API and things, so we could use Flight instead for the data transfer layer. There's another interesting thing called Plasma that's a way for reading and writing data to shared memory. And so if you're transferring data between processes on the same machine, you can use that. Thomas?
Yeah. Can you say a bit more about the cross-language schema representation? Would
that
Aero be used for the
wire-compatible
encoding?
I'm not totally sure how that would work, I guess. I mean, right now we have, so there's Schema Coder in Beam that has like a wire-compatible row-oriented format. I think maybe in the short term it would be like you would have an option of doing either one of these, and like somehow the user would select which one it would be. Because, you know, there may be some cases where you just want to use the row-oriented format and you don't want to deal with the overhead of columnar. So, I think it would sort of be like you would have data that's a schema and you could either represent it as Aero or as, like, our row-oriented thing.
Maybe something depending on whether it's batching streaming execution.
Yeah, that could be it. I mean, I think that you could get benefits in streaming with columnar, but, it's harder there, so.
So when you use the Aero data format, like how does it translate to the Linker component? Do they have, this is sort of like an Aero question, how does the, if I define like an Aero data type, and then at some point we have to communicate it, potentially we may have to communicate with Linker. So how does it like convert into a
bytecode
or something like that? Do they have their own thing to do, or
In the C++ implementation, there's like a memory pool implementation, and they use that for like allocating memory and stuff. I'm not sure I follow your question.
Entirely. At some point, you have like the password, whatever data in memory, you can wipe off the whole network properly.
Yeah.
So either you have to use something like Cryo, or you have to have your own way to transfer those bytes into the network format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'm less familiar with those sorts of internals. I think that those might be the kinds of things that like Flyte is trying to address with like their modifications to like gRPC. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about that. Yeah, I think we need to move on. So
if you don't have a flashlight, come and get one.
Yeah, only if you ask a question.
And there's more here, so. There we go. Good morning, everybody, again. As you might know, I'm one of the Beam Summit organizers. Some people will know me in the room. But in a previous life, I also spent some time developing Beam pipelines. And this morning, I'm going to briefly present what I did at the time at Datatonic, where we developed a solution using Apache Beam for a company called Sky. So before we kick off, maybe for the Europeans in the room, this might be a bit of repetition, but Sky is a major media company in Europe. They have 22 million subscribers across UK, Italy, Germany, Austria, and they provide a lot of products going from TV, broadband, to phone, mobile services. And as you will see, the solution is kind of Google Cloud focused, and this is because back in 2017, Sky decided to use Google Cloud for their data workloads. But yeah, most of the talk is about, I tried to keep most of the talk about Beam. So SkyQ is a product we're going to talk about, and it's, to give you some context, it's a set-top box that sits under your TV, and it's their flagship product, and you kind of interact with it with a remote, flicking through channels, or trying to find some content that you might be interested in. And what did Sky wanted to get out of that? Because you might ask the question, why are we talking about set-top boxes? So basically, all of these set-top boxes generate some events whenever you interact with them, and these events are captured and sent to the processing backend for further downstream processing to create some insights. For example, what do your users do when they are going through the UI, and what is, for example, the content they are looking for and interested in? And obviously, people are watching TV at any point in time. This kind of naturally creates a stream of data coming off the set of boxes, and that's why Sky arrived at looking at Apache Beam. They had a Hadoop solution before, and there they were running into some problems because it was a batch pipeline, but obviously people keep watching TV overnight, and sessions got cut off, et cetera, et cetera. Data was only delivered a day later. So unbounded stream of data, Apache Beam, it kind of made sense. So they were particularly interested in some of the concepts that Beam provide, the windowing, and in particular the session windowing, because they want to look at the burst of activity of a user interacting with a set of box. And then some of the native tools that you get with Beam to interact with late arriving data, because obviously sometimes someone turns off their setup box and then events don't get sent to the backend for processing. And case in point, they decided to have session windows with a 4-hour inactivity gap and a hard cutoff at 24 hours, because some people keep watching TV or clicking buttons, and yeah, at some point you run out of memory, so you need to stop your session. Cool. So a side effect of people watching TV, it's kind of an erratic pattern throughout the day, because during the day most people are out at work. At night people turn on their TV, so more events get generated, and that's how you kind of end up with this thing. On the weekends as well, more people spend more time, more events get generated. And this is also one of the reasons they chose to go for a particular runner, which is a data flow runner, because it comes with kind of a service architecture where you don't need to worry about the ops. Your cluster will auto scale whenever more data arrives in your pipeline. So they were really happy about that as well. So as a consultant, we went in and we tried to think about how can we help the people to solve this problem and have a nice processing pipeline. And we wanted to get an end-to-end solution. So data gets produced on a set of box. We wanted to know what schemas the data would come in. So we wanted to talk to the people that design the firmware of the set of boxes, because obviously if you don't know what they're going to produce, you kind of will run into some problems when you're processing the data and some messages get lost because you want to act on a particular schema. And on the other hand, we wanted to know who our customers were. For example, what questions do they want answered? How frequent do they want their question answered? Is it fine if the data is delayed by a day? Things like that. So we tried to get some buy-in from everyone in there before we started designing the solution. So what did we come up with? This is kind of where I dive into the technical architecture, and we'll describe the different sources and how we went about processing the data. So we had the set of boxes, obviously, where the fact data gets created. And these are the actual events that went into the pipeline. But another important source of data was the dimensional data. So reference feeds of their existing customers that we kind of needed to create useful insights further downstream in the pipeline. Obviously, we needed to ingest this data into our processing systems, and this is where the ingestion comes in. So for the data in motion, we ingested the data in Google Cloud PubSub, and for the reference data, everything was staged into a BigQuery. And then this is where Beam comes in, finally. we have the unbounded stream of data coming off PubSub, and we decided to process this using Beam on top of Google Cloud Dataflow. So we have the first pipeline here, which we called the processing pipeline. And that was a pipeline that took care of parsing the data. So we were looking at enforcing the schema, logging faulty messages to a dead letter queue, filtering some data, and most importantly, we took care of the sessionization in there. This data was then written to BigQuery, and we used BigQuery to do the intensive joins, the heavy lifting of the joins between the reference data, and quite a lot of the fact data. So yay, we have everything sitting in BigQuery now. We call these the raw joined events because they were enriched with the reference data. And then we ingest them into what we called the enriching pipeline, where we applied some more complex algorithms to actually look at the user sessions, because you have a bunch of events for example, me watching an hour of TV now, but what can we actually get out of that? Like, what menus did I visit? Where did I decide to actually watch something? Or at what point did I churn and turn off my TV and go do something else? So that's what we looked at in the enriching pipeline, and that's also where, for me, it was kind of cool to use an imperative language, in this case Java, instead of something like SQL, because you needed to look through the events, look at different things that were happening there, and that was kind of easier to do in Java than in SQL. So kind of framing what we decided, we made some decisions in both pipelines. Kind of framing by the four questions everybody asks when designing a Beam pipeline. So what were we computing? In the first pipeline, it was element-wise transformations. So just the filtering, the sessionizing, filtering the, and some things like regular expressions. While in the second pipeline, we looked at the group of events and then processed them. Where in event time, I already went through that as well. We choose session windows, and then when in processing time, this is where the triggers came in. We had an early trigger set up for after 24 hours, get rid of the session when it was overrunning. We had the normal after watermark trigger, and then we had late triggers in case data would arrive. And last question, we just used discarding paints to clear the buffer whenever the next thing arrived. Cool. So moving on to the users of our data, because that's what we actually cared about. So we kind of split it up across advanced data users, where we had people using the raw events coming out of the processing pipeline. So they were people that could write their own queries, do their own joins if necessary, and they could benefit of the low latency of the data arriving into BigQuery. While the normal data users used the data coming out of the enriching pipeline. So they were people that kind of could were self-serving using BigQuery and writing their own queries, but they were happy that some of the work was already done for them. And then lastly, we had the dashboard users, which were the people that kind of got their Tableau dashboard in the morning. All of the stuff was already calculated for them, and they could just look at the dashboard and see what happened the other day. So kind of looking at the overview, we have the ingestion of the data, processing of the data, usage of the data, and obviously there were some other things that needed to happen, which was monitoring, which we used StackDriver for, and orchestration of the joins, for which we used Apache Airflow. And I want to highlight that I think, it's kind of a GCP heavy thing, heavy architecture, but for example, PubSub we could potentially replace by Kafka, BigQuery we could potentially replace by Drill, and monitoring we could, for example, use Grafana. So I think it's perfectly possible to do this in a more open source approach, but Sky was happy to have some of the things done for them rather than having to do it themselves, which was, everybody happy. So looking at where we came from, on-premise static size cluster to NoOps streaming pipeline on Google Cloud Dataflow made them happy. As an engineering team, but them as well as a customer. So overall success, and I hope this is probably the least technical presentation on the Beam Summit. But I hope this kind of brings the users as well to where the people in the project kind of
produce the code. So
yeah,
thank you.
So I'm relatively new to Apache Beam, and I'm just getting started with Cloud Data Flow. I'm curious, with a big, like, high-volume pipeline like this, how do you manage making changes to the pipeline later, like after initial deployment?
That's a good question, and something we had some troubles with as well. So we delivered this as a one-off solution. But obviously in Dataflow there is the upgrade that you can use, which kind of drains your pipeline and then applies new things on top of that. There is restrictions to what you can do. So I think you kind of have your tag and it kind of needs to have the same structure if you do upgrades. Otherwise, I think you can still drain it and PubSub will keep also your messages. You're using PubSub as well?
No.
Okay, you're using Kafka?
Actually, we're on Rabbit, we'll be migrating.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if your the structure of your pipeline radically changes, if it's as easy. That might be a bit harder to do. Cool, thank you.